This is Kevin Conroy, the voice of Batman.
This is Will Friedle, the voice of the future Dark Knight, Batman Beyond.
And you're listening to the DCAU Review, hosted by Cal and Liam.
Streaming at DCAUReview.com and on your favorite podcast app.
His name is Zeta. He's kind, gentle, and also a top secret military weapon. He's made a decision.
I will not destroy anymore.
Now, with the whole world chasing him.
Please help.
He's on the run with his only friend.
I'm equipped with a built-in credit card. I can generate as much money as I need.
You are so taking me shopping.
The Zeta Project.
This episode is brought to you by Shopify. Forget the frustration of picking commerce platforms when you switch your business to Shopify, the global commerce platform that supercharges your selling wherever you sell. With Shopify, you'll harness the same intuitive features, trusted apps, and powerful analytics used by the world's leading brands. Sign up today for your $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/tech, all lowercase. That's shopify.com/tech.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Welcome, everybody, to episode 283 of the DCAU Review. I am one of your hosts, Cal, and with me, my good friend, good brother, the man that runs all of our social media accounts, it's Liam. Liam, talked about it last week. There are three certain things in life: death, taxes, and the unfortunate burden of having to review the Zeta Project. And let's just say it's not tax time, and both of our hearts are still beating at the time of this recording. So I guess we're down to option number three here, as we are set to review not one, but a double feature of Zeta Project episodes today.
Yep, it's a puke face type of show. It's a double feature, and boy, I'm just gonna say off the bat, here's a little teaser for the two episodes we're about to review. I think one of these is pretty all right, and I think one of these is dreadful. So, well, we can't wait to talk about our two episodes today. Those being Crime Waves and Taffy Time.
Yep. I'm curious. Because I came in, well, we won't get into it here. I'll just say that I feel like based on the title, you're going to judge one and assume one is going to be way worse than the other. So I'm curious to see if that matches up when we get into it.
I was going to say, if you listen to our show, our Zeta Reviews, without actually watching the Zeta Project, you may be making the wrong assumption based on the episode titles, which one I didn't care for. But we'll have to wait and see.
That's right. Let's get into those, Liam. But before we, of course, break down our two features, we, of course, are going to do one at a time because we're not simultaneous Zeta reviews. While efficient in getting Zeta Project reviews out at the same time would be completely unlistenable and insane. Perhaps if we recorded them separately and had them playing simultaneously in each speaker, that would be that might be the way to go going forward. But we're not doing that today. We're doing one episode at a time. But yes, we're going to get into our two reviews here. Before we do, we are going to get our first of two Internet Movie Database synopses for this week's episodes. And the first one, of course, is going to be for Crime Waves, which originally debuted here on the Kids WB, at least according to the not very reliable Zeta Project Wikipedia, April 14th, 2001, meaning, we celebrated the 22-year anniversary of this episode's debut just a few short months ago. And of course, our Internet Movie Database synopsis is brought to you by the Pod Tower, If you like DC animation, podcasts, and YouTube, too, we have the channel for you. Head over to youtube.com/thepodtower today and subscribe. We invite you there. Not only will you get the entire Tim Talk podcast library, which features a review of these very Zeta Project episodes from those fine gentlemen, but you also get a podcast from the Watchtower database folks, which includes a current reviews of Superman the Animated Series from their podcast Jump on the Batwagon, and then of course the entire DCAU review podcast catalog, also all featured in one convenient space on YouTube. If you already listen to your podcasts on YouTube, well, why not go over and subscribe today at youtube.com/thepodtower.
That's right. So this is the synopsis for Crime Waves, which was written by Kevin Hopps and Rich Fogel, directed by Bob Desette, with music by Lolita Ritmanis and animation by Coco. And that synopsis reads as such. Zeta and Ro meet Wade Pennington, a rich teen who finds himself harassed by a biker gang.
I mean, that's a port. That's like the first 3 minutes.
I was gonna say, yeah, that covers.
Which honestly,
not that much deeper,
right?
That, but there's a little bit more to it than that.
Yeah, he's also very mean to his robots, and yes. And he learns a lesson in the end, believe it or not. But if you've not heard a Zeta Project review before, God bless you for listening to this one. We tend not to go into the deep dives as we do on the other episodes and other reviews that we do, just not only for our own sanity, but for our listener sanity. So we'll give the general overview for this episode. Is Ro and Z find themselves on a beach waiting to find out for additional news on the net as Zeta's search for his creator continues. In the process, the aforementioned biker gang shows up chasing down a nerdy looking chap on a bike. These are like not anything like the bikes that we see in Batman Beyond, but we've nitpicked how a lot of the styles changed. These are like hybrid mechanical bikes that just sort of also happen to fly, sort of like the cars. But they chase them up and down the beach. Z steps in and manages to help this mysterious gentleman escape from whatever this group of biker gang group is and what they're doing. They're harassing him. Not sure why they're chasing him down. Z steps in full disguise and helps save him, chasing off said biker gang. Running in at the very last minute is Wade's bodyguard, Sven, which is much more fun to say than he is as a character. But Sven shows up a little too late, looking a little worse for wear, saying that his own bike happened to break down. And he does have this, some sort of machine that he pulls out that looks like a bazooka, but also like a mace or a club, but it shoots some sort of ray that disables robots, as we see him shoot it and disabling a robot on the beach. We learn that he is, in fact, Zeta's bodyguard. And we get an introduction to just who this gentleman is, Wade Pennington. His father is a famous robot creator, and therefore he fits the prototype of a spoiled, entitled rich kid very well. And he just happens to invite Zeta and Ro back to his palatial estate, and it's there that they see him and just kind of get the full Wade Pennington experience. You know, he's clearly very spoiled. One of the robots, he's got all these different robots waiting on him, quite literally hand and foot, as we see him getting a massage from one. One brings out some lemonade that he determines is not pucker worthy. The line I believe he delivers is, "Make me pucker."
Right. We assume he means his lips, but we can't be sure.
We cannot be sure, as he shouts this at a robot. But yes, he's very mean to the robots. He takes his watch off and throws it in the pool because he wants to establish that the robots are not worthy of care. He throws the watch in the pool and makes the robot go to get it, which causes it to short circuit as it saves the watch. And then he has a good laugh as it malfunctions in and around the pool. At that point, I believe Zeta and Ro excuse themselves and leave as they begin. They go to a internet cafe to do further research, once again trying to track down Zeta's maker. And in the process, they see a news report in that cafe noting that Wade has been abducted. And wouldn't you know it, the news media just happened to capture this conversation happening between Sven and one of the police officers that showed up. And Sven indicates that it was a dark-haired fella and his little blonde girl sidekick that were likely responsible for abducting Wade. And we are sort of off on the adventure at that point as both. How could two people be more wanted by the police? Like, this is just like an extra layer of, hey, we're already wanted by the authorities. Oh no, we're even more wanted by the authorities now.
That's right. They've got the feds after them. They've got local police, and I guess the private security firm that Sven works for, all hot on the trail to find out what's going on. But Zeta and Ro are eventually able to elude, thanks to that handy ability that we've now established that Zeta has. Not only can he transform himself, but he can like create a wide enough hologram that it can cover Ro too. So they do that and they escape. And so they go looking for these, that local biker gang that they had a tussle with earlier. They find their hideout. And after some fisticuffs and action, they reveal, in fact, pretty quickly, that the actual mastermind behind this kidnapping plot was none other than Sven himself. It be your own people sometimes, you know? and that kind of takes us to our final act here. We'll talk maybe more about it in visuals, but it's a pretty action heavy beat as to confirm their suspicions, they sneak onto a ship of some kind where they find out that Wade is being held. And they thankfully look into like the little ship, the circular ship window. I feel like there's a name for those, but I can't think of it.
Isn't it a port?
Porthole. Correct. So they look into a porthole and there's Sven on his computer with the biggest font you've ever seen on a computer screen, shouting like ransom money paid or something. I think it says transfer complete or something.
Ransom accepted.
Right. It might as well have said crimes completed. So we now have our confirmation that Sven is our bad guy. And Zeta and Ro are then accosted by some of the robots, some of the security robots and butler bots that we find out have been reprogrammed by Sven. Man, he's a cool guy, and we get some fisticuffs. At this point, Zeta is still disguised, but they're sort of knocked down into a lower section of the ship where they find Wade being held. And when it's time to escape, Zeta here sort of reveals himself to be a robot. And boy, Wade begins to learn his lesson about how poorly he's treated other sentient robot beings in the past as Zeta and Ro work together to save his life countless times. And in the end, as it seems like Ro and Wade can escape while Zeta is still facing off with Sven one-on-one, it's actually Wade who makes the decision that they have to go back and help Zeta. And ultimately, they're able to... This is actually the only good part of the episode, when they decide they're going to help Zeta and stop Sven. Wade comes like jumping in, trying to do like a flying karate kick, and just immediately gets smacked with a bazooka or something, and just knocked down immediately. It was, I thought, very good comedic timing on that. It does give Zeta a moment to recover. We really need to discuss how, like, in the first episode, Zeta gets rid of all of his weapons because he will not destroy anymore as the as our intro lets us know every week. But he still has like lasers and buzzsaws and stuff.
Only the guns. The gun-shaped weapons were the ones that he threw away. Everything else is fair game.
So I guess this is like a welding laser that he's shooting in this scene. But it's very powerful, whatever it is, because it cuts through like metal to drop this bell onto Sven's head and disable him. Regardless, His bell is rung quite literally. And Zeta and Ro save the day. And then we get a little epilogue where we see Sven being led off by the police and what's his name? Wade has learned his lesson. He's being nicer to his robots and has decided they're going to be his friends now. Because that was like another like throwaway line, is that he doesn't have any friends and his parents are never home. So now he's decided the robots will be his friends, that he's making them play basketball with them.
Yeah.
So that's our epilogue here, as Ro and Zeta make a pithy remark about the idea of humans and robots teaming up together. So that's our ending, and then we get our little history lesson. This week was on the outdated concept of paper currency. So that's our little end bumper to end our episode. So
yeah,
I didn't like this. I didn't care for this one.
Yeah,
Wade, one of the least likable characters. He's like, it's lucky for him that we've had like 3 Bucky episodes.
Yep.
Of Zeta to talk about, because otherwise he'd be the least likable character in the history of this show, and on the short list for least likable character, because like we have long since established that these robots are sentient and he's basically killing them for fun. That's psycho behavior.
Correct. Yeah. Replace the robots with like animals, and it's like, oh
right,
he's laughing that he just killed an animal. Like, yeah, that's right.
Kid needs to be in therapy. Like
that's what we would deem, you know, serial killer behavior in the real world. So yeah, not that funny, not that cool, not redeemable in my book.
Yeah, and then it's like, well, he only likes robots at the end because he finds out Zeta's one and Zeta saves his life.
Mm-hmm.
It's like he only learns the lesson, oh, they're sometimes valuable, and then he decides he can make them be his friends at the end.
Yep.
Very unlikable, not redeemed at all. You know, I wish Sven had gotten his way and offed him. That would have seems like an unlikely ending for this children's cartoon that we're talking about, but it would have brought my score up a little bit, as I ended up with a very very low 3 out of 10 for my plot score.
Yeah, well, it's not that low because I gave it the exact same score, 3 out of 10. I gave this show too much credit in that I thought, and again, what we will preface this again by saying, all of this, what happened to this show was not what any of the people that worked on it originally thought it was going to be. So the vision of the show got distorted. I think we say that every single time. So this is not to say we're not the target audience for what this was. However, I think even when you look at cartoons that are made specifically for children, there's a way to make good cartoons for children. And I can't imagine how much meddling was likely happening based on just a little bit of what we know from things that creator Robert Goodman has talked about. So we know there was a lot of meddling. So this is not to say that the people that wrote or were responsible for this content are not capable of great things. We are talking about the final product. Right. We're talking about the final product of which we are reviewing today, which is Crime Waves. And the final project is poo-poo. It is not very good. I gave it far too much credit when I expected that there would be 2 twists. I thought that the real twist would be that Wade kidnapped himself in an attempt to get his parents' money in a way to like screw over his parents, because his parents are never around and he's this lonely boy and he's going to show them and he'll take their money and he'll buy friends with it or whatever. No, it's the guy that you assume is going to be the guy from the second that he shows up is the bad guy. And
he's also just constantly being berated by the kid throughout the whole episode. Right. So it's like, if there's anyone you feel sorry for in this episode, it's Sven.
Justice for Sven is all I can say. Yeah, 3 out of 10 for the plot. It's just
that would have been interesting. Or like, here's an idea. Maybe it could have been like a robot uprising, and the bots were behind the kidnapping.
There we go. And then you're like, oh, the robots are tired of being treated like crap, and now they're going to stand up for themselves, and they've decided to kidnap him, and they're going to take the money and go build a robot island or something.
Right. And they could have done season 2 of Zeta could have been Avatar, but with robots instead of blue things.
Or maybe Sven turns out to be a robot. These are infinitely more interesting, I feel, than what we ended up with as our final product here, which was very much, as we'll talk about in a second, Scooby-Doo and very clearly like big red arrows pointing at this is the guy. It's the guy that has an axe to grind for being treated like crap, that is a live being and not the robot. So low scores from both of us. It's not a good story. Could have zigged instead of zagging, and instead they did the very predictable zag and ended up with something that was just not very good.
Yeah, I mean, I guess, yeah. If you put this in front of like a 5-year-old, I guess maybe they get you can teach them the metaphor that this is like, you know, how rich people might treat their maids or their service staff or their, you know, their employees. And, you know, you shouldn't treat people a certain way just because they work for you or they, you know, they're underneath you and you have power over them. But it's like, it's just not done in an interesting way. And as mentioned, he isn't just rude to his staff or non-appreciative of his staff. He's a weird little psycho boy. So no bueno.
Yes, agreed. All right, Liam, let's move on to visual and animation, which is going to be this week done by Coco. So I cheated this week, and I don't know if you partook as well. There is a upgraded version of the Zeta Project, a archived, upscaled AI version of the Zeta Project, which makes it about 300 times more watchable for me. And that's what I did. I watched that version instead of the low grade version on Amazon or the DVDs. So visually, this episode doesn't have a lot that's exciting. We get the little chase at the beginning. They have the action beat with the motorcycle chase, which I guess is interesting. There's some hijinks that occurs in the midst of it. There is a lot of dialogue, walking around, sneaking around until we get to our final scene that reveals the who our ultimate bad guy is for the episode. But the final fight, if you want to call it a fight, is kind of where the main action takes place for the episode. But another part of this show's sometimes deficiency is that they weren't really allowed to show violence of any sort of magnitude. Way worse than like early seasons of Batman the Animated Series. Like, just like nothing. Couldn't close fist, can't show a fist throwing, and then cut to a flash. There's just like it's always some sort of hijinks that ends up foiling our hero or villain. And in this case, same thing happens with a giant bell falling on the guy's head. So I didn't think that there was anything bad about the episode. I think the stuff with Zeta, I did LOL when he gives himself a tan. When Ro tells him to get a tan on the beach at the beginning, he darkens his skin color, which was funny. I think the setting for the final fight being on a boat was interesting. The different robot designs are certainly interesting. I'm sure there's probably direct homages to famous sci-fi robots. The only ones that I thought I sort of picked up on, the robots on the ship sort of have the same dome heads as R2-D2 from Star Wars. They have like a tread that kind of looks like the Redux of Lost in Space. The movie in the 90s had a robot that sort of looked like that, not the original Lost in Space robot. But I'm sure there's probably some DNA, or there may have been some homages within the robot creations that I may have missed. But other than that, I didn't think that there was anything too terribly interesting to write home about. I did find it very funny that that Wade was able to outrun the motorcycles in the first scene. Thought that was pretty funny. And as I sort of alluded to, that kind of leads me to think of like what else. There's several scenes of people running. There's one specific scene that looked just like Scooby-Doo is like a side scrolling run from left to right across the ship's bow. I was like, Scooby-Doo is in the DNA of this show. I feel like
just
very much like what this show is without the laugh track associated with it. But overall, I think it's a fine episode with as far as visuals are concerned. Nothing that stood out as being bad. Nothing that stood out as being super right home worthy. So I ended up giving it a 5 out of 10. What about you?
Yeah, I went with the exact same score, 5 out of 10. I think the sequence where they go to interrogate the biker gang, and they have the fight where the guy has the little blowtorch that he's trying to slice Zayd up with. I think that's kind of a creative setting for a fight that's not like our usual fare for a Zeta project.
Yeah, I forgot. They think that the biker gang is responsible, but it turns out that they were hired by Sven.
Right, of course. And I do like how Sven looks like New Batman Adventures Dick Grayson with blonde hair. I think that's kind of funny. we really don't know what happened to Dick after the New Batman Adventures.
Dear God, so don't make up fan theories about it. Sven's dad, please. Or Sven's brother.
Maybe he met a nice Swedish girl and settled down. We don't know. But I think that sequence may be in the little gang hideout where they fight, and it's like an auto body shop or whatever. So there's like there's bikes, and there's like I said, he uses like this weird little blowtorch thing. I think that's kind of a fun sequence.
There's an explosion that happens.
Yes, it's like the closest thing to like interesting action that I think happens. And then, as you mentioned, yes, the sequence where the three Zeta, Ro, and Wade like climb up the ladder, and then they start like sneaking across in single file, mm-hmm. is like the most, as you said, is like the most Hanna-Barbera Scooby-Doo thing you've ever seen. So that's kind of a cute little homage there, but otherwise not much to write home about. Nothing terrible, but nothing particularly spectacular either. And I don't know if I mentioned this. I like when Zeta gets sad eyes, like when his eyes turn when he's hurt. Mm-hmm. They do a good job of letting Zeta emote in his robot form, even though he, you know, doesn't really have like a mouth or like a real face.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think we talked about that when we started the actual Zeta Project show reviews, in that changing the head was probably the best thing that they could do in order to help create an emotion, like to help you connect more with the character. If they had kept the horseshoe head, it probably would have been very difficult to communicate outside of his human form what he was experiencing emotionally. So the fact that they were able to give him eyes that emote as the robot in his robot form was certainly a good decision, I feel like. All right, Liam, let's move on to our next category, which is going to be music for this episode. And that was done by, as you mentioned at the top, Miss Lolita Ritmanis. And I got to say, I don't have a specific piece that I can point to other than maybe the music in the intro during the bike scene. But I thought that this felt way more traditionally or similar to Batman Beyond music for a lot mm-hmm. of the action. It definitely has more of the guitar and drum and mixed with like the synthesizer, as opposed to just sort of the happy go lucky goofy synthesizers we'll talk about maybe more in our second episode. But it was refreshing. I think that if the show had been allowed to have been as dark as Bob Goodman's original view of it could have been, that this would have been an integral part in making it feel like you're playing in the same sandbox as Beyond. And that's what sometimes makes these episodes, I feel like, so difficult to review, is that it's supposed to be in the same time, in the same area, in the same universe as Batman Beyond, and nothing feels the same, even down to the music choices sometimes. So the fact that this one is at least grounded and has that similar rock aesthetic made me appreciate it a little bit more than I would, I think, standard fare. Again, I don't think there's one piece that I'd point to and it's like, yes, that's a great piece to listen to that I'd like to listen to in isolation. But I feel like the soundtrack did what it was required to do. You have that final piece take place, that final scene take place on the ship, the fight. Some good soundtrack as the tension builds between Zeta and Sven. You know, what's going to happen? Who's going to come out on top? So yeah, overall, I ended up giving music a 6 out of 10. I think that it's better than the standard fare, and Ms. Ritmanis did a great job of kind of grounding it, making it feel at least musically adjacent to the Beyond series.
Yeah, that was actually the note I had as well, especially in the action sequences. A lot more guitar driven than I feel like our previous few Zeta episodes. Maybe it's because we were dealing with more like traditional criminals for some of that scene, so she thought it made more sense to bring in some of that music there. But yeah, I thought that was kind of a nice change of pace, and like you said, nothing super standout, but a solid job, not unexpectedly, from Mr. Ritmanis. So yeah, I ended up settling on just kind of a middle of the road 5 out of 10 for my music score, if I didn't already say that.
All right, Liam, let's move on to our final category of the day, which is going to be voice acting. And this week we have more of our standard cast. We have a couple of, I would say, recognizable by name and maybe role, but he's named that Baldwin brother, except it's not an actual Baldwin brother this week. He's not related, just happens to have the same last name. But let's talk about this week's voice cast for our first episode.
That's right. So we in our minor roles, I will just mention, because of who he is, Tom Kenny voicing one of our thugs, and I think also the butler bot, of course, the voice of SpongeBob SquarePants himself and a trillion other cartoons. But fun to hear him pop up. He's one of those voices you just hear immediately and you know who it is. So fun to hear him pop up in a small role there. But yes, we have Adam Baldwin as the aforementioned Sven. Doesn't try to do a Swedish accent, unfortunately. but yes, we would know him from the DCAU. We would know him probably playing Rick Flagg in a couple of episodes. And then you might know him in his live action work from things like Full Metal Jacket and Serenity. He's got just kind of a certain gravitas and menace to him that I appreciate. I don't think he gets much interesting or really anything interesting to do in this role, because even when it's revealed he's the villain, it's not like he takes a super sinister turn in his voice or whatever. It's, you know, he's just kind of got this like stern, you know, a little bit of a gravel to his voice, kind of no nonsense guy. But you know, he's fine. He does what's asked of him.
Yeah, I don't have any strong critiques. I don't know what we obviously don't know what the direction was, but seemed to fulfill the role as what was needed for the episode.
Absolutely. And then our other main guest star, Chad Lowe, playing Wade Pennington. Folks probably know him, at least in the DC world, a lot of minor voice acting roles. He did play Cosmic Boy in Superman the Animated Series. But also has done a lot of work as a director, especially a television director, including for things like the live action Flash and Supergirl series. So has a little bit more work, perhaps better known for his work behind the scenes than in front of the camera or in the voice booth in this case. Let me just say, Chad, I think, is supposed to be a child. Wade, I think, is supposed to be a child. Mm-hmm. Chad Lowe did not in any way attempt to sound like a child. Mm-mm. He's like a reverse of Mayor Hill's son, who had a child's voice but looked like an old man. this guy sounds like a 43-year-old man, but he looks like a teenager.
Correct.
Interesting. So for that reason, yeah. For that reason, like, nothing against him. Again, as always, I'm sure he was just doing what was asked of him, but kind of a weird choice. And I thought very distracting the whole time. So I didn't really enjoy his performance as Wade. And not to mention, as we've already talked about, Wade is a wholly unlikable character. So maybe my dislike for the character was also bleeding over into my dislike of his performance.
Is it wrong? It's nothing against Chad Lowe, but I feel like Rob Lowe, his brother, would have been a better casting option. Just him doing his character from Parks and Recreation as this character would have been infinitely more entertaining. So yes, I'm sure Mr. Lowe is a wonderful human being, I'm sure he's a wonderful actor. I don't think that if he was cast as, or I think that if he was cast as an adult male for this role, it would have been a little bit different. But because he seems to be playing a bratty kid, or at least a bratty teenager, it is very odd. It was a very odd choice. So it's hard to separate the performance from the character overall. But yeah, it's not a bad performance. It's just maybe the wrong performance for this character, perhaps.
Yeah, I just, like I said, I didn't like the performance. I don't blame, like you said, you don't necessarily blame him as an actor. Just kind of a strange, I don't necessarily think he was right for the part here. And like I said, just didn't like the character in general. And his performance did not exactly help that. Again, not that I blame him for that, I just don't necessarily know that he was right for the part. So and then moving on to our two main players, those of course being Julie Nathanson as Ro and Diedrich Bader as Zeta. As always, if there's a saving grace to this show, it's their performance and their chemistry together. But they don't have much to do. Like, it's a lot of Wade and Sven in this episode, and Butler Bot. Like, I feel like there's a little bit, I think, where they get to kind of talking, where Ro is basically, when they find out he's kidnapped, kind of just wants to look the other way because of what a jerk he was, and isn't really interested in helping him. But Zeta's need to protect the innocent and to save people is kind of overriding his heroic qualities. There's a little bit of interesting, but again, would have been a very interesting potential subject for an episode of Zeta having to, in fact, maybe we'll talk about that in a couple of minutes here, episode where Zeta has to save someone that hates and fears him. But we don't really explore that too deeply, unfortunately. But, you know, as always, a pretty good job done by Miss Nathanson and Mr. Bader.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, not as much for them to do for the episode, but we can see here we're, what is this, 8 or 9 episodes into the first season here, really hitting their stride, I feel like, as far as their chemistry is concerned. And there's some quips and banter, of course, the usual suspects as you expect for each episode, and they do a fine job. There is one part where the scene where Zeta and Ro go to that biker gang hideout. I thought that it was pretty cool that you kind of get a "what if Zeta was Batman" type line. He like shakes the guy down because he's looking for where Wade is, and he's like, "Where is he? Where are you hiding him?" And it's not quite Batman, but it's like, this is a little foreshadowing that this guy could eventually be a very good Batman. So yeah, I liked that scene overall. I we forgot to mention when we were doing the review, but yeah, that scene overall was actually pretty fun. And I felt like that would be a interesting dynamic to this character if he was willing to kind of embrace that at times to be the more like intimidating, lean into the intimidating factor as a robot. So yeah, I liked that. I didn't think, again, everything was fine as far as the casting choice, perhaps, for the 35-year-old man as a 15-year-old boy, notwithstanding. But I ended up giving our voice actors for this first episode a 6 out of 10. What about you?
I went a little lower. Because again, I just didn't care for Mr. Lowe's performance. So I went with a 4 out of 10 for my voice acting score. I just, I just don't think there's anything there in the voice acting performances. Like I said, I always Diedrich Bader and Julie Nathan do a good job together, but they don't get much to do. And otherwise it's Adam Baldwin providing a serviceable but forgettable performance as Sven, and Mr. Lowe as Wade, a character that I cannot stress enough I hate. So again, that might be the plot dragging the voice actor down unfairly. Maybe this would be a 5 on other weeks, but I'm a little bit sour mood right now. So he gets a 4. We're getting a 4 for voice acting for this episode.
Hey, that, as Bobby Brown said, that's your prerogative. So, you know, do what you got to do. Liam, that will bring us to the end of our scores for this first episode of our double feature. Wrapping everything up here, I end up with a 20 out of 40. What about you?
And somehow I ended up a couple points lower, I guess, as I ended up at a 17 out of 40.
Skip it.
Yes. There's really, literally, like, they pay lip service. They're like, aren't we supposed to be looking for Dr. Selleck? And they're like, yeah, we can't find anything. We're not doing it this week. Like, that's basically, they might as well have literally said that. Like, this is a filler episode, everybody.
Yep, skip it. All right, Liam, part 2 of our double feature right now as we go and let's get our second official IMDb synopsis of the episode for this episode, Taffy Time, which, according to the Zeta Project Wiki, debuted on the Kids WB back on May the 5th, 2001. Again, 22-year anniversary just passed earlier this year.
All right, this is the synopsis for Taffy Time, which is written by Joseph Kerr and Rich Fogel, directed by Kurt Geda, not Tim Maltby, music by Lolita Ritmanis, and animation by Coco. And that synopsis reads as such. Zeta is targeted by a bounty hunter. The bounty hunter captures Agent Lee and uses her as bait for Zeta.
That is, in fact, what happens. It's a very literal descriptor. Yeah.
I was going to say, and like, usually you could at least, like, we could, when we do our plot synopsis, which we can get into here, we would be like, okay, we'll just like touch on when it changes scenes for the most part. Mm-hmm. This one doesn't really change scenes very much.
No.
Go ahead.
I would just like to know where they're starting out. They're running through the jungle. Is it the rainforest? Are they on another planet? Where are they?
Yeah, they're just in a forest or a jungle, as you said. And it's Agents Lee and West are chasing them in one of their weird little hover truck things
with a tortoise shell on the front.
Right, and Lee and West are kind of bickering and eventually, as Lee and Wester are chasing down Zeta and Ro, a mysterious device hits their ship, and they have to make an emergency crash landing. So Zeta and Ro get away, and Agent Lee decides she's going to go off and search for them in the woods by herself, while she keeps West back at the ship to try to repair the radio, so that they can call in for help. And wouldn't you know it, as they're wandering through this forest, I guess we find out that this is all the villain's plan, was to get them to this spot and lure them here. But again, we don't know how they got to like this general area, to your point.
Right.
But yes, Zeta and Ro, as they're walking, trying to keep their distance from Agents Lee and West, they discover what else but a giant candy factory with like a literal, what appears to be a house literally made of candy.
Mm-hmm.
And Ro even makes reference to the Hansel and Gretel fairy tale as a mysterious stranger that they can't quite see shouts at them from the building and tells them to come inside, and that he'll give them shelter from their impending attackers.
Yes, and just like your parents told you, when a stranger invites you into their house of candy, please enter. So, we get a little backstory as we get a Ro recognizes the candy house as part of the Koala Candy Factory, What is it?
Cody Koala.
Cody Koala Candy
Factory. There's never been a mascot called Cody.
Cody Koala. Cody the Koala. Now,
not like, I assume it's like Chuck E. Like, I don't know. Like, is it Chuck E. Cheese? Like, I couldn't quite tell what this was like.
You would think they would want to spoof some sort of candy, though, but like...
Right. It's not like, it's not like Willy... Like, I'm trying to think if there's like...
Cody Koala is alliterative, just like Willy Wonka. So right. Perhaps...
Okay, maybe that's it. Yeah, like, I couldn't think of like an animal, like, chocolatier mascot or candy mascot off the top of my head, but I'm sure there's one out there.
We do get a line later on, which is a direct line from Willy Wonka and the Chocolate Factory, so I'm gonna assume that that might be at least an inspiration.
We get a song, as we'll talk about later.
Oh, do we get a song? Yeah, so the Cody Koala Candy Factory, the Cody Koala Candy Company, apparently up and moved out quickly overnight, which explains why the factory is filled with food supplies still, I guess. That's why that line was said. Mm-hmm. But as Ro and Zeta make their way up to this figure in the shadows who reveals himself as not being Dr. Mindbender's son, as from mixed with Winter Soldier. It's like if Dr. Mindbender from G.I. Joe and Winter Soldier mated, they would have this guy, Crick, who turns out to be our main adversary for the show. Spoiler alert. He reveals himself to be a bounty hunter, and that he's there not to help Zeta and Ro, but he's going to collect a rather large bounty on both of their heads. And it's at this time, just when it seems like he's about to kind of close in, Zeta does his best to remove Ro from trouble. Zo is like Zeta and Ro together. So Zeta does his best to remove Ro from trouble and throws her through a garbage chute, allows her to escape the factory, leaving just Zeta and Crick mano a mano, or robot a mano. I don't know. Or the other guy's half robot too. He's got a robot arm, so I don't know.
Cyborg.
He's part machine.
He's a cyborg, and Zeta is an android, I believe, would be the proper definition.
Thank you. Thank you. I appreciate the clarification. That is very important that we're keeping that straight here. Yes. So cyborg v android, dawn of candy or something takes place here as we go through. Just as when it seems like Zeta is done for breaking in, Agent Lee, who went off to try and track down the aforementioned Zeta and Ro, breaks in, spots them, and has a rather large weapon that she pulls out and tells Crick that he needs to drop everything. Crick explains once again that he's a bounty hunter and he's there to collect a bounty. He attacks Agent Lee, and apparently he's done enough research, as he tells Agent Lee later, that Zeta is a good robot and he won't let anything happen to Agent Lee. So he immediately begins threatening Agent Lee's life, and when Zeta doesn't show up, he doesn't kill her. He just puts her in cuffs and leads her around till he gets to the electrical room so he can turn on the power to the factory, which turning it on introduces us to the jingle that you mentioned, the Cody Koala Candy Factory jingle, which has so many lyrics to it. We'll touch on that in music. But yes, we get the Cody Koala Factory jingle talking all about making candy. We see that there are these they're full robot, but only half of their bodies are covered with koala-like features, wearing little costumes. They're the ones helping make the candy, I guess? Maybe? I don't know. There's a series of these robots marching around that look like koalas but have robot feet. They are marching around, they're singing the song, and the conveyor belts are turning on, the stoves are turning on, the chocolate is melting, and they're making candy and taffy and all of the good stuff. So that goes on, Agent Lee again is being paraded around, and Crick is trying to get Zeta to show himself. He's continuing to sneak around. Meanwhile, outside, Ro is trying to get back inside, but unfortunately, when the power was turned back on, a force field was also turned on. The factory complete with a force field. Who'd have thunk it? Am I right? So there's a force field that's turned on, and Crick reveals that his purpose for doing so is not to trap everybody inside, but to keep Agent West out. So Ro is out there trying to figure out how she's going to get back in. She happens to stumble upon, wouldn't you know it, a rat eating a piece of chocolate that leads her directly to a sewer grate. She knows in this moment that this is going to be her way back in. But wouldn't you know it, just at that time, she's about to enter the sewer grate. She's interrupted by Agent West, who is having none of this and wants to arrest her on the spot. But she lets him know that his partner is stuck inside with Zeta, and he's going to be the hero and rescue everybody. But he doesn't trust Ro to go first. He has to go first.
That's right. And so, of course, Ro, feigning shock and surprise, allows him to run directly into that electrified gate and knock himself unconscious. And so she, at that point, she handcuffs him to the metal grate and then begins to make her way inside as we continue our final battle. So as Crick, our bounty hunter, continues to try to stop Zeta, he's got these very convenient gadgets, including he has this little monocle, as you mentioned, his Dr. Mindbender thing, which allows him to see Zeta through Zeta's disguise. So Zeta tries to disguise himself as one of the little koala bots. Did we mention that all of the factory workers are Cody koalas?
Yes, they're like, but for some reason their legs aren't koala legs, they're robot legs.
Correct. So they got they ran out of budget to finish taxidermying the bottom half of the robots. But yes, so he's seemingly overmatched. Agent Lee, despite being disarmed by Crick, has won a trick up her sleeve, quite literally, as she pulls out some sort of a flashbang device that blinds Crick and destroys or shorts out his special monocle that lets him see Zeta. And Zeta, he does what anyone would do at that moment and decides he's going to tie Agent Lee to the taffy machine. Mm-hmm. And stretch her out. If Zeta doesn't come forward, he's gonna stretch her out. So Zeta, having helped, having reprogrammed one of the Cody Koala bots to be used as a distraction and weakening the supports that are holding this walkway above, they cause the walkway to fall down and seemingly crush him, which infuriates Crick because he's convinced now that Zeta is destroyed and he won't be able to collect his bounty. Ro and Agent West come in. We get some slapstick. Ro kind of helps, is able to help Zeta when it looks like Crick has him dead to rights. And finally, as it looks like once again Crick has Zeta dead to rights, Agent Lee actually makes the call to kind of distract him. And that allows Zeta to finally defeat him. And then as it seems that Agent Lee now has Zeta dead to rights, however, she notices that Agent West has gotten himself in a real slapstick pickle as he's still handcuffed to the big metal grate and is now hanging precariously over a ledge. So she very clearly and intentionally allows Ro and Zeta to escape. And has kind of seemingly has been clued into the fact that Zeta is not the monster killbot that Agent Bennett has convinced her he was, and she now has her doubts. Though Agent West, of course, being completely oblivious to all of this around him, is just a little upset that Zeta and Ro were able to get away from his partner, and that's kind of how we end it.
Yeah.
And our little bumper this week is just chocolate because Ro likes chocolate, even though, as Zeta points out, we still have chocolate in the future. This isn't a history lesson.
There you go. Yeah. And I don't know if we mentioned, I think you mentioned it, but the collar thing that it was very clear. So Crick had this device that was a collar that was going to disable and allow him to take Zeta in. During the happenstance, this was picked up by Agent Lee. She had it in her possession. She tells Agent West at the end that she had to choose between standing there with Zeta and Ro or saving him, and she didn't have any way of detaining Zeta, but then our last shot is her taking the, after she saves Agent West and he's bragging about how he saved her, she takes the collar, turns away, takes the collar and hurls it into one of the vats of chocolate. So again, giving you that idea that she's perhaps changing her thoughts on how how she perceives Zeta. So definitely leading to some intrigue further down the line. But as we mentioned at the top here, Liam, I think going into these episodes blind, just with titles, I would have assumed I would have hated this episode. Mm-hmm. And I was pleasantly surprised that I actually found it more enjoyable, at least. Perhaps maybe this is a case of if I had viewed this on its own, I wouldn't have liked it as much. But because I was comparing it to the previous episode, I liked this episode a lot more than the other episodes. So I thought it was at least interesting. The stakes seem pretty high. We have people that are in danger. We have violence. Even though it's mostly intimated at the end, we have some severe consequences for our bad guy.
Zeta uses his buzzsaw hands.
Yeah. We get metal arm versus buzzsaw. We get a lot of interesting stuff here. So and the fact that you kind of have this turning of one of the agents here who's starting to not believe in the mission based on her interactions with Zeta. That's also very interesting. It's going to add an interesting dynamic to that character and how the interactions go forward. So, overall, I thought that the plot, while it's interesting because it only takes place in a very small area, it didn't really need to expand beyond this goofy chocolate factory. That actually adds a lot of fun, I feel like, to the episode, because it does take place in this candy factory and there's all these other goofy elements to it with the koala robots and all this stuff. So, I wouldn't go far as to say I really, really, really enjoyed this episode, but I definitely enjoyed it more than our previous episode and ended up giving plot a 6 out of 10, which may be the highest plot I've given a Zeta Project, or at least tied for a Zeta Project episode thus far.
Yeah, I gave it the exact same score. I think it's a solid little adventure. It's interesting. Once again, Zeta kind of put into a position where he has to value human life. There's the line where Crick says you would think he's been programmed to protect human life at all costs. That's how much Zeta, you know, values human life and will do anything he can to prevent a death, even one for Agent Lee, who's been hunting him and trying to capture him the whole run of the series. So, like, it's an interesting beat for Zeta. We get to see some character. It feels like Agent Lee's a real character on the show now.
Right.
As opposed to like her, like Agent West has at least kind of got like the bumbling slapstick kid thing, you know, bumbling agent in a few episodes, but Agent Lee really hasn't done anything.
Right.
Other than been like, you know, her and West like tripping over each other when they're trying to arrest another episode. So it's like, oh, she's a character now. We're seeing depth. We're seeing we're furthering the story. Like, right. we furthered the story in the first couple episodes of, like, Zeta learning his creator's name and, you know, trying to track down leads. We've talked about that, the fugitive, Incredible Hulk-style influences on the show. But now it's like, oh, the agents that are chasing him are now starting to, or at least one of them is starting to have doubts about the overall mission. So they're not just this, you know, uninteresting, bland boogeyman who shows up once an episode to chase Zeta now. Like, there's something interesting happening now. So I think that's fun. And then, as mentioned, given that it's set in a candy factory, you wouldn't necessarily expect it to be as action-packed and interesting as it is. And we'll talk about that more in visuals, certainly. But I think Crick has some good menace as a villain, too. And some of the things that he sort of implies, like when he's going to hook her up to the taffy machine and stuff, like he's a real sinister guy. So I think they do some good stuff. One trivia note we did see, which is thanks to an interview on World's Finest website, our friend James, who works over there, Writer Joseph Kerr, one of the writers for this episode, mentioned that this was always kind of pitched by him as a hunter-hunted story with Zeta and Agent Lee captured and being hunted by somebody. And apparently Robert Goodman and Rich Fogel had suggested actually bringing in another Batman Beyond connection and using the Stalker as the villain. But apparently Kids WB decided they should use this Crick character, who I guess was a character that was designed or at least thought up for the show Bible when the show was first being created, but they had not found a use for, so they decided to stay in-house rather than doing a crossover. And that's fine. Like, I don't think this episode would have been tremendously better if it was the Stalker running around a candy factory,
right?
But it would have been, I mean, it would have at least, it would have been more interesting for overall DCAU fans if another character like that crossed over here. But overall, I think what they did was fine, and like we said, it was a good episode showing, you know, the heroic qualities of Zeta and Ro, and an episode, like we said, that gave Agent Lee a little bit of a personality for the first time. So a thumbs up there.
Yeah, I wholeheartedly agree, and that's reflected in our, at least for Zeta, higher scores than usual. We doubled our score from our first feature, so absolutely, there's a lot there. All right, Liam, let's talk about visuals and animation now. As you mentioned at the top, Coco is responsible for our animation for the episode. I guess we can talk a little bit about Crick's design. As I mentioned jokingly at the top, it definitely gave me Dr. Mindbender from G.I. Joe vibes with his monocle, sure, and his long purple jacket.
Why is everybody wearing purple on this show? Like,
they love the bright colors. I'm guessing it was probably a mandate from the execs at the network, maybe. Could I don't be, know.
Well, it's like in the old days, like in the Tiny Toons Batman the Animated Series days, the answer would be because we only had like 10 colors,
mm-hmm,
which is why like Robin's color on his sleeves and pants is blue sometimes, because they only had like that, whatever the color of the duck in Tiny Toons was like, that's the green that we have.
Right.
for our episodes, at least for that first run of episodes. So you see Robin looks kind of weird in a lot of those episodes. But like, I don't know what the answer would be in the digital color age, other than it's a bright color, but you know, you can't give him like pink or neon green, I guess. So purple is like the most menacing of bright colors, I guess.
You heard it here, folks. Liam declares purple the most menacing of the colors.
Hey, you know, Ray Lewis wore purple, and then, you know, the Ravens defense of the year 2000.
Right, there we go.
Menacing defense in NFL history.
The Minnesota Vikings and
absolutely
the NFL were known as the purple people eaters. Yeah, so I guess it is a more menacing color than I first at first glance. But
at least in athletics, I don't know about superhero stuff, but anyway. I the design with like, he has like the ammo pouches on his chest and the big metal arms. You mentioned, it's a very, maybe not the color palette, but the design feels very like 90s, like Rob Liefeld, X-Force, like Image Comics.
Yep.
Type of thing. Like,
there's definitely some Cable or who's the Bishop. Like, there's some sort of like giant muscular dude with, and doesn't Cable have a metal arm too? Like, isn't that part of his character? Doesn't he get
it? Yeah, he does. Yeah, he does have a big metal arm, and this is don't get mad at me because I don't know my X-Men lore that great. It's all from like the back of action figure packages and whoever was in the cartoons that I saw. But Cable is a mutant, but he has a disease where his body is turning metal,
right?
So he has like a half metal arm and like part of his face is metal, I think.
Yeah, so maybe that's part of the, maybe that was the general idea or homage to this character, is having some of that 90s like big ripped muscular, mm-hmm, extreme dudes, you know, that were sort of ubiquitous during that time in the comic book industry, in homage to that. It definitely at least appears that way at first glance, but with the metal arm and all the pouches and all that stuff. But yeah, very interesting design. Interesting that he wasn't necessarily designed for the episode and they were just like, yeah, this guy looks like he could be a bounty hunter. Use this character model. And then it works out pretty well. But yeah, I think that the, as we mentioned, it taking place at a candy factory, while it does ground it in like a little bit of silliness, they did what they could to make it as goofy or as less goofy and more menacing. As you mentioned, the scene where he first of all takes Agent Lee and puts her in the cuffs and then is leading her around, and then I believe he utters a line, I'm gonna enjoy this, before cutting to break. And then we come back and she's tied up with like a lollipop in her mouth. Is this the writer's vaguely veiled or poorly veiled fetish thing, the meme, or is this just we're trying to make this guy out to be a really, really bad guy here? I don't know, not for me to say. But I message me offline and I'll tell you which one I think it is. But yeah, it's they did their best to make this a menacing end. He's threatening to essentially pull her apart in the middle, if he by pulling this latch and disemboweling her, I guess. So yeah, it's an interesting, it certainly like balances out as being like a light and goofy thing, but I think we've seen, you can see that in pop culture and horror movies and wherever, where you take something that's sort of innocent and kiddie and friendly and you kind of flip it on its head and make it out to be this horrifyingly scary thing. And that's kind of what they did here. They didn't turn the robots evil or make them like, you know, super scary or intimidating, which I thought they could have, or I was kind of anticipating them doing at some point. But yeah, that's, it's fine. It, like I said, it definitely didn't hurt the episode that it took place here. If anything, I felt like it enhanced it. Any thoughts on our Cody the Koala character design, or do we need to talk about that? I thought he was cute.
Yeah, he's a cute little guy. Yeah, there's definitely maybe a missed opportunity to do like a prototype Saw or Five Nights at Freddy's or something there with the with the cute little mascot turning murderous or whatever. But yeah, I thought it's a fun thing. Some of the actual like action beats when they're fighting, there's a bit where like Zeta's kind of knocked back and he sort of realizes he's up against this big vat, and he does like this like Burt Ward Robin thing where he kind of like picks his legs up and then like kicks out and does like a mule kick on Crick and knocks him back. Like I was like, well, that's kind of cool. You don't really see like kung fu or like hand-to-hand fighting in this show very often,
right?
So I thought some of those sequences, the sequence where Crick is, we get to see several times him looking through that monocle, as mentioned, it kind of allows him to just see whatever, it lets him see in the dark, and then it lets him see through the Zeta hologram. So when you sort of see his POV of all of the Cody Koala bots walking, and then we see him see through the hologram and we see little Zeta trying to sneak his way through, and then he shoots and like blows out his knee and we see like all the wiring coming out. I thought that was a pretty neat sequence as well. So yeah, I think they definitely gave Crick some like physical menace and formidability.
That sounds formidable. Yes,
they made him formidable, let's just say that. And I thought that was reflected, and it ended up being, as mentioned, kind of an action heavy episode, and even some of the slapstick stuff with Agent West I thought was pretty fun as well, with the bit where he decides he's gonna triumphantly walk ahead and Ro is just kind of standing there with her hands on her hips waiting for it to happen. And then we just hear the electricity, and then we see his body collapse. Like I thought that was kind of a fun bit as well there. And then, as you mentioned, that last shot of her kind of when she tells Agent West that she had no way to stop Zeta, and then we get the reveal that she was still holding the collar, and then she tosses it into the vat at the end is a pretty good visual as well.
Yeah. So, last thing I'll mention before you give your score is can we talk about how they intimated that something happened to Crick's face, whether it was burned off or like injured in the explosion in some, there's this hot, giant boiling vat of chocolate that explodes. He's in the explosion. He lands. Agent Lee goes over to check on him, and they never show his face again. Zeta asks if he's going to be okay. She pauses and then she says he'll live or something like that. But we don't. Yeah, I thought that was. I was like,
a little Harvey No here.
Yeah. Like, hey,
Two-Face Beyond here.
Yeah, I don't know enough about the show to say whether or not this guy returns or not, but it was at least a little, hey, if this guy comes back, maybe he has a cyborg face on top of his cyborg arm or something. But yeah, very, very interesting that it felt like the most violent thing that I've seen thus far in the show, or at least intimated violence, which they didn't do a whole lot of intimated violence for their own purposes and reasons. So sounds weird to say, but it was nice to have some intimated violence for an action show, I guess.
Agreed. And yeah, so for all these reasons, I think a very strong score per Zeta standards. I gave visuals and animation a 7 out of 10.
Wow. Yeah, I gave it the same exact score, 7 out of 10. We are we're on the same track here so far. But yeah, for Zeta, as far as that's concerned, it was a different episode. Was not expecting it. Pleasantly surprised. So, all right, Liam, let's move on to our next category, which is going to be music, once again, done by the great Lolita Ritmanis. Mm-hmm. I have very little to talk about other than maybe the main event for maybe the entire episode, but certainly when it comes to music, which is the Cody Koala candy jingle.
Yeah, we get to hear it like 2 or 3 times. Yeah, I felt like a lot of the factory bit, at least when it was like Crick sort of being menacing and talking to Agent Lee, we didn't really have music in a lot of that scenes. It felt like the music laid out for a lot of those beats, mm-hmm. and really only came in when you got your action sequences with the big explosions and everything towards the end. So not a lot of musical notes, literally and figuratively, I thought, other than... Well, let's just get to it then. The aforementioned Cody Koala jingle.
Yeah. I tried my best to find a transcribed version of the song and came up empty. So instead, I'll just play the clip right here.
Have some candy, eat some sweets, koala candies can't be beat. Licorice, caramel, lollipops, jelly beans, chocolate bars, lemon drops.
And what an incredible clip it was, Liam. It is instantly memorable, instantly earworm worthy. 5 stars for that piece. Miss Ritmanis clearly had Absolutely. A lot of fun in writing an imaginary candy company's jingle. Like, how can you go to work? Like, I'm not obviously a paid orchestral musician. I'm not here writing and composing pieces for television shows, but I can't imagine how fun it must have been to come to work that day and see write a jingle for an imaginary candy company called the Cody Koala Candy Company. Clearly she had a lot of fun. The lyrics work very reminiscent. I guess we didn't talk about this in visuals, but maybe the koalas are also supposed to remind you of Oompa Loompas a little bit in the way that they're working at the candy factory. It's not like a homage in any way that I recognize to the classic Willy Wonka songs, but it is in the same vein. It's goofy, it's memorable. So for all those reasons, solely on the basis of that composition, I ended up giving music a 6 out of 10 for this week. What about you?
Yeah, I once again gave it the exact same score of 6 out of 10. Not much else to write home about besides the song, but again, we don't get things like this, a chance for our composers and writers to stretch their creative muscles like this with an in-universe jingle too often. So gotta give special props when we get that.
Absolutely. All right, Liam, let's move on to our final category of the day, which does once again feature some of the same voices that we talked about in our first episode, but we don't have a large cast. But we, of course, do have our two agents. We have our two stars. And then we have a very memorable and often found in DCAU show member playing our Cody the Koala. He does get a voice check. So let's talk about our small but mighty voice cast for this week.
That's right. So voicing the aforementioned Cody Koala, really he's just singing, I guess, for the most part in this episode, mm-hmm. is the great Jeff Bennett. We've talked about him plenty of times, but voice of Johnny Bravo, the voice of Dexter's dad on Dexter's Laboratory, and just a trillion other voices across very many cartoons, including many DC cartoons. But always fun when he pops up. And then other than our regulars, who we'll get to in a moment, we do have Keith Sarabajka. Apologies, I'm almost positive I'm messing that up. But voicing Crick, he's been in things like Argo, has done a lot of guest spots on various TV. A lot of like one episode here, one episode here, mm-hmm. of a CSI and a Law and Order, that type of working actor, I believe they're called. And he gets to be, considering how, and they actually mentioned that, I think that's also from the World's Finest interview, is that they kind of mentioned that, Kids WB, as mentioned, really wanted this to be a very kid friendly, and they mean, you know, six and under friendly show. And so the people making the show's decision was, well, what if we set an episode in like the most kid-friendly possible place, a candy factory, and then wrote this really sinister bad guy who's, you know, a real weird creep into it as like a little bit of subversion to the concept. But yeah, I think Mr. That's the last time I'm going to try to pronounce it, just out of respect. Sarabajka does a very good job. I'm just going to call him Keith because his first name's Keith. Mr. Keith does a great job as Crick, being again, considering you can't say kill or death or anything like that. I think he gets away with being quite menacing for this television show aimed at the youngsters.
He's mean, he's creepy, he's sinister, mm-hmm. and you want to see him get his tail handed to him by the end of the episode. And when he does, I was happy. So, I'd say he meets the criteria for a good casting choice and for pulling off that characterization well. So, yes, great job.
Absolutely. And then in our main or regular cast, we have Michael Rosenbaum, of course, the great as Agent West, just playing this completely oblivious buffoon from the first part of the episode when they're arguing about how he's like, aha, I knew we'd find them here. And Agent Lee is, of course, played by the great Lauren Tom, is very, very more matter of fact of like, no, they sent us to the middle of nowhere because they were trying to get rid of us because Agent Bennett hates you. and we just got lucky and happened to come across them. So I think Lauren Tom and Michael Rosenbaum get some fun stuff, but Michael Rosenbaum especially gets to kind of be the comedy relief, playing off of not only Miss Tom but also Julie Nathanson as Ro, as mentioned. So always fun to have him in there. And then to Miss Lauren Tom, as mentioned, actually gets a lot to do in this episode, as she kind of has to deal with a lot of things, not only being sort of the proactive agent, the agent who actually has her ish together, but then she has to be she kind of has to play being menaced by this creep. And then she also has to play sort of this conflicted side when she sort of realizes that maybe she's been wrong about Xavier this whole time, and maybe he's actually a hero all the way to the end, where she, as mentioned, decides not to bring him in and decides to let him go. Unsurprisingly, given how often we've gotten to sing her praises on this show during her various roles across the DCAU, Lauren Tom does a great job today.
Yeah, she's really good. I think it's easy to forget, especially when she's probably mostly known as Dana, and Dana kind of takes a back seat the later seasons of Batman Beyond. Doesn't have as many starring roles throughout that series. It's sometimes easy to forget, I feel like, that she's really accomplished, good actress. And this episode, I felt like she certainly plays off Michael Rosenbaum very well, as the straight man to his goofy Agent West. And then as we go throughout the episode, her interactions with Crick, her interactions with Zeta, even at the very end, very, very emotional, as we can see this sort of turning of the tides in how she's perceiving Zeta. You see that kind of go throughout the characterization throughout the episode, and then kind of landing on this at the end where she decides to let him go. So very, very strong performance this week from Miss Lauren Tom, and it shouldn't be surprising, but I feel like it sneaks up on you sometimes because of just how little she ends up being used in those later episodes of Beyond.
Absolutely. Yeah. She is, like you said, maybe you can kind of forget her or let her slip into the background because Dana gets like two lines per Beyond episode most of the time. But yes, and then of course, as mentioned, we have once again Julie Nathanson as Ro and Diedrich Bader as Zeta. Again, not as much for them to do because we have our villain and Miss Tom taking up a lot of the main voice acting roles. But I do really like the interaction between Agent West, Michael Rosenbaum, and Julie Nathanson's Ro outside. When he's like, no, you're trying to trick me. I'm going to go in first. And she very, as you mentioned, this straight from Willy Wonka says, don't stop, come back in almost that exact, just tremendously delivered by Miss Nathanson. So they get a little bit of levity, as mentioned, when we have such a sinister bad guy threatening to do such terrible things to Agent Lee and Zeta on the inside. And then, yeah, Diedrich Bader again. He doesn't talk a lot because he's hiding and disguising himself for a lot of the episode. But again, always, as mentioned, him and Miss Nathanson always a highlight of this episode. So I would say for all those reasons, again, this being just a really strong episode vocally, another probably record for high voice acting score. I gave voice acting an 8 out of 10.
My goodness, we matched scores up and down the scorecard today because I ended up giving it an 8 out of 10 too. Yeah, for all those reasons. I think Miss Tom's performance, Keith's performance as Crick, and even the quips and the comedy bits between Michael Rosenbaum and Ro, I thought were really, really solid. So up and down here, even though our main and perhaps our strongest voice actor had the least to do for the episode of Mr. Bader, it's still a strong performance, and I guess it's indicative of this episode's strong performances up and down the card here, even though it also wasn't a big voice cast either. So a pleasant surprise, but a welcome one, to be sure.
Absolutely.
All right, Liam. Well, let's total up our scores. I think we're going to have the same exact score as long as I do my math correctly here. But totaling everything up at the end here, I end up with, this has to be a record for Zeta episodes, a 27 out of 40.
That's right. And as mentioned, we were matching in each category, so I also have the exact same score. This has to be a record for Zeta.
All right.
Not since that guy shouted my stockpiles have I had such a good time watching the Zeta Project.
Definitely the greatest Zeta line of all time. I don't think there's going to be a challenge to that one as we go along here. But I don't think this is an I don't think any of the Zeta episodes, the Batman Beyond crossover episode notwithstanding, are must watches. I think if you're grading on a curve, or if you're looking at, hey, is there a Zeta Project episode that I can watch and not feel like, I want to go do anything but watch this, I would say maybe this episode, So yeah. Give it a half thumbs up, like a sideways, the Orange Cassidy, maybe.
Yeah.
Like,
I think this gets the ever so slightest thumbs up. And as far as importance to the series, as mentioned, unlike the other episode we talked about today, it does further things along and like you said, gives a new depth to the Agent Lee character. So
That's true.
Important to the series and a pretty solid episode overall. So shock of shocks. No one's more shocked than the two of us that we're saying that this is a even approaching a one thumb up for rewatchability. But here we are.
Yeah, that's where we are. All right, Liam, well, that will begin to wrap us up for this week's episode. If you listen to this episode, thank you so much. We know that it's a bit of a slog to get through these, but hopefully you enjoy the comedy and the enjoyment and the dialogue along the way. If you do like the podcast and wish to support us, you can go ahead and do so a myriad of ways. A couple of the free ways to do so are to subscribe to this podcast on your favorite podcast app. We're on all of the major podcast apps, including Apple and Spotify. Spotify, of course, gives you the opportunity to interact with us. We put up a weekly question and a poll that you can interact with. If you're on there, you listen to us, give us a 5-star review. We would greatly appreciate that. We know that Apple allows you to leave a 5-star review also and leave a little blurb. In fact, we've been telling you as listeners, if you leave a 5-star review, we'll read it on the air. And if you're in the continental United States, we'll send you a little thank you gift. Liam, our thank you gifts to our last two reviews are going out this week as at the time of recording. And wouldn't you know it, we got surprised with another 5-star review this week to read on the air. Man, it's like people are feeling really enticed by the offering of us sending them free stuff. Hey, whatever.
We're not afraid to bribe.
That's right.
But yes, I want to thank everybody who does take the time. You can just do that. If like we always say, it helps us just to give us 5 stars. But if the app you're listening to us on allows you to actually leave a little blurb, appreciate it. Hey, you can make it 2 words. Just say good show. I'll read it.
If it's there you
five
go.
Stars. Only if it's 5 stars, I'll read it.
That's right. It has to be 5 stars, but we didn't say it has to be a paragraph.
Yeah, you could just say good show and we'll read that too. But this is from The Football Fanatic, and it says, do you want to hear straight talk on the pros and cons of the DCAU? This is the podcast for you, where they break down each episode, even the Zeta Project, much to their chagrin. Boy, howdy, you had no idea, buddy. And delivery, and so I should read this. I editorialized and ruined the flow of this review, where they break down each episode, even the Zeta Project, much to their chagrin, and deliver you an entertaining, knowledgeable podcast. So thanks to The Football Fanatic. If you want to reach out to us via the DMs or publicly on Twitter or Instagram, or I swear I'll check the Threads account one of these days. And so if you contacted me there, I'll see it there. But either way, reach out to us if you're, as you said, if you're in the U.S. and we'll be happy to send you a little gift. But either way, we do appreciate, as we always say, Cal, that's a great free way to support the podcast.
That's right. You support us. We support you with little tchotchkes. So thank you to those that have already done so. If you want to support us monetarily, financially, there's ways to do that in the show notes. You can check that out. There's a link to our store. Buy yourself a shirt, mug, hat, something, sticker. You can do that all on that site. You can also check out the Support Us Monthly link as well. We have a few supporters that give their hard-earned cash so that Liam and I can buy ourselves coffee and keep our real jobs, our day jobs, and keep us awake and aware for those. So thank you to our monthly supporters and those that give us their hard-earned dollars monthly. All right, Liam. So that means that as we come to the end of this week's episode, our short stint here in the future, we are looking towards next weekend with our next episode. And with it being spooky season and Halloween soon being upon us, we figured it's time to get into the spirit or spirits of things with a Halloween-themed review next week.
That's right. And so we're heading back to another familiar universe, though one we haven't tackled in at least a few months here. That being the world of Batman, the Brave and the Bold. And the episode is entitled Trials of the Demon. And it's really, really, I think only our prologue is going to take place specifically on Halloween. But the episode, the main episode, does also feature Etrigan the Demon. And, you know, what's scarier than a demon? So it fits. The theme fits. Don't at me.
That's right. We've already reviewed The Long Halloween. So if you want to hear our review of The Long Halloween movie, you can check that out in the archives.
And we just did The Batman like 2 weeks ago, so we can't do The Batman versus Dracula this year.
We're giving it a break. Right. Come back next year for more of The Batman. You got The Batman, The Brave and the Bold, and you're going to like it. It's going to be fun. Can't wait to tackle that with you. But until then, I'm Cal.
And I'm Liam.
And we will talk to you on the next episode of the DCAU Review.
Goodbye, but like a spooky goodbye.